Today, the X-Men are blowing up all over again. The X-Men 97 animated series on Disney is catching millions of eyeballs as people rediscover their passion and their love for the X-Men. And so many of these great characters are popping right and left. And some of the creators behind these characters are not getting the recognition that they deserve. And we are here today to talk about the architects of X, the creators that gave you so many of these different characters. Some of them you're meeting through the cartoon for the very first time. The Deadpool Wolverine trailer dropped. The all-new trailer dropped. Everybody else has given your reactions. Why shouldn't I do the same? And I do on an all-new episode of Robservation. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Robservations. I'm your host, Rob Liefeld. I have been making comic books, writing, creating, drawing, inking, publishing, yes, sometimes printing comic books for the last 40 years. I have been collecting, obsessed with comics for the last 50 years. It hit 50 this year. If there is one thing that I might be an expert at, one thing that I have some serious knowledge of is comic books. And comic books is absolutely my passion, competing only with the passion that I have for my beautiful family and that passion has burned since I was a little kid. On Robservations, we talk all things comic books. We talk comic books, comic book movies, comic book streaming, comic book video games, toys, and none of those would exist without the actual comic books by the comic book creators. So often here, you will find us focus on a specific comic book creator because I'm just in awe of them. Just like you are in awe of your favorite musician or your favorite music star or your favorite sports star. And I have all those categories. I have people that check those boxes as well. For those of the comic book obsessed, I have the comic book creators that I just continue to be in awe of as I get older, as time passes and the work resonates and I get to study it and I examine like every panel, every page and think not only what it meant to me, but what it meant to that person and then what it meant to the entire culture. And really that sums up Robservations. It has been 4 years here. We are coming up on our absolute 4-year anniversary. I always judge things. This is very strange, but I always look at 4-year passages as that's your time in high school. That's your freshman to senior year. My wife and I, there's 3 years between us, and sometimes it feels like it's 8 because we just had different upbringings. My wife didn't have an older sister who was just more into rock and roll and the scene, and I could just you know, borrow those albums. And we're talking the 70s. And I've mentioned it before, but Aerosmith, you know, Pink Floyd, AC/DC, so much of the, my sister's car just had a sea of 8-track tapes. 8 tracks was the preferred way to listen to music in your car, in the late 70s. And so I was able to kind of be exposed to a little more of a rock and roll childhood due to my sister who I love. And whenever I mention her, I want you to know those are great, great memories of those times jamming out to all that music. Because in my parents' car, they were listening to Christian music because my dad was a pastor. So now remove my sister and all my wife has is her experience with her parents listening to Christian music. And she says, I was in the basement listening to Christian music and listening to Christian radio. Like they didn't even watch like much television. She was much more, she's in a much more sheltered existence, which makes me laugh. But that 3-year existence between us sometimes, I mean, like I remember the president of the United States resigning. I watched it on television. I watched Nixon resign. That's how old I am. Yes, I am freaking old. Okay. So my wife has no memory of that whatsoever. She barely has memories of Jimmy Carter, the president prior to Ronald Reagan. So 4 years, we're not even 4 years apart, but sometimes it seems like 8, but a 4-year span is like, you know, I always go, it's like high school. Now, you're like, LIFO, that's also presidential terms. Correct. And sometimes in your high school experience, you can do two presidents. Maybe you were the, you know, maybe you were the end of Reagan and into Bush. Maybe you were the end of Clinton and into Bush. Isn't that weird? That's completely strange. Maybe your entire high school was Obama. Maybe it was Trump. Maybe it will end up being Biden. For me, my freshman to senior year was the beginning. What was the first term of Ronald Reagan. But 4 years is a long time. Lots of things happen. You know, sports dynasties, you know, rise, fall, you know, actors have a string of their biggest films. Well, you know, Sylvester Stallone kind of was reborn during my high school period. Rocky III and First Blood and Rambo II all came out between my sophomore and my senior year, and it really gave him that leg up as a premier A-list Hollywood action star that he did not have when I was going into high school my freshman year. So Sylvester Stallone's career arc just was super juiced, maybe more than we know during that period. So 4 years, it's crazy. It's crazy that we've been doing this for that long. But I thank you. I am so thankful when we get to the actual anniversary episode. In 2024, we did our 350th episode a couple months back, and now we're about to do 4 years. And I just want to again say thank you for listening. Thank you for being as obsessed with comic books as I am. In regards to comic book creators, I really have been kicking myself when I realize I don't say this man's name enough, and it really, really came into focus and screamed out at me this last week during X-Men 97 episode 6. So the great thing about X-Men 97, it has given me a free pass to talk about all things X-Men again, my absolute favorite story, my absolute favorite comic book characters, comic book, it's my favorite subject. And when I say, hey, we talk about at the top, when I just said just a couple minutes ago that we talk about comic book movies, comic book streaming, well, ding, 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 ring the bell. Comic book streaming is X-Men 97. Okay. It has blown the doors off. I mentioned to you, it continues to move comic books. It has reignited all things X-Men with people. It was the right vehicle at the right time to return focus to what was once a 15-year dominance for one title. We've covered it here in the annals, or as some of us want to say, I'm not going to do the locker room humor. The annals. I'm just going to keep it at the annals of history, okay? X-Men just rocked the top of the charts. It was the go-to franchise for Marvel Comics. They could mine it for so many characters and concepts and worlds. And what you saw in Episode 6, of X-Men 97 was yet another reminder of a true titan of the X-Men who I don't give enough props or flowers or just all around consideration to. You've heard me say his name, but today, as we discuss X-Men architects, the architects of X, and go behind the curtain and really, really parse the contributions of these different talents that have shaped. And you're like, Rob, it's Claremont. I've given Chris Claremont his due. Throughout the entire course of our observations in my entire lifetime, he is the single greatest writer of the X-Men. Full stop, end of story. I've also, and you'll have to find these episodes, there's a couple back episodes I'm gonna specifically cite coming up here, but across the spectrum of the Robservations show, I have often let you know, because as a kid, I would go to these comic conventions, and Chris came out to California a lot. So I some of this is just first hand knowledge from Chris. Chris responded better to art he liked. There was art that existed that he would work with collaborators and it whatever it took to get the trains to run on time. But there were certain artists that really he sparked to and collaborators that inspired him like no other. I was there when he was flirting, like literally flirting, creatively flirting with Art Adams, wooing him based on his long shot pages that Art had come out with. When are we going to do an X project together? Come on, Arthur, you know you want to draw the X-Men. It's something that Chris is saying from his steel, his metal chair that the, that he was provided at the Creation Convention up in Los Angeles as he is wooing Art Adams. And Art Adams is like, oh, well, Chris, I'd love to work with you. You're one of my favorites. And so I would watch that openly happen. And what happened was the Asgardian Wars, the New Mutants special X-Men annual that went back to back in the summer of 1985. And that blew fandom just completely through the wall. I mean, it was a force of nature. I've done an entire episode on Art Adams' epic 1985 years, epic year of 1985. It is when the delayed long shot, which he took about 3 years to draw, came out at the same time. The entire body of work was about three and a half years because all of his long shots came out and the X-Men and the New Mutants annual. So it gave you the staggering amount of Art Adams' work. You've never received more work by Art Adams ever before or since. And it just changed the comic book landscape. His art and his kind of siphoning of different influences into his own unique Art Adams influence kids like me, like Todd McFarlane, like Jim Lee. Todd wasn't much of a kid. He was in the business, but it affected him. Again, all of us have talked. Eric Larson, even Mark Silvestri, who like Todd was established at the time. Chris was totally wooed by the artist that he was with. So across that 15 year experience, or 16 years really, he worked with a lot of great artists, very different styles of storytelling. And some of the uptick in the quality of the stories and some of the uptick in the emotional resonance or maybe the excitement is because of a particular talent that he was working with. He has told me to my face how much he thoroughly enjoyed working with this particular talent, Dave Cockrum. I have said Dave's name to you before, but I don't say the names often. I do not say his name often enough. And today, because of episode 6, we're going to talk about Dave Cockrum, what he meant in his two-time collaboration with Chris Claremont. He is, so just right off the bat, if this is one of your earliest episodes of Robservations, let me tell you, Dave Cockrum is the driving force behind Giant Size X-Men number 1, which was written by Len Wein, not Chris Claremont. Len also plotted issue 94, which returned the X-Men to being a regularly published comic book with fresh and new material. Chris would then take on and take over from then. Len was wearing many hats, writing all manner of different books for Marvel at the time. I've talked about Hulk and Spider-Man were among the most popular. I mean, he did some of the top tier books for Marvel Comics during that time. X-Men was left to Chris. One other thing you need to understand, X-Men was a bi-monthly title. After being in reprints, you would literally go buy comic books of the X-Men for 3 straight years, a little longer, that were just reprints of other issues of X-Men, and it was a little longer because those were bi-monthly. Marvel kept the title around. They put a new cover on an old Jack Kirby issue, on an old Jim Steranko issue, and just give you a fresh cover. And again, if you had never encountered it, as NBC coined in the 1990s to promote their reruns, if you haven't seen them, they're new to you. And those comic books, if you hadn't experienced them, they were new to you. I was picking up some of those random X-Men reprints. They were not book issues that I had encountered before, stories that I had encountered before because I was such a young kid. So they were, in fact, new to me. But the Giant Size X-Men, which Dave Cockrum contributes the characters for in a co-authorship with Len Wein, characters that you would not have met without Dave Cockrum, are Colossus, are Storm, are Nightcrawler. Okay, now you're talking, right? Now you're talking. You're like, these are absolute heavy hitters. Thunderbird, who would go on to leave the book very quickly, but would have a tremendous impact down to the point where I would take the original Thunderbird design and put it on an existing brother of John Proudstar and make him Warpath in the New Mutants because I just love that character so much. And I thought that given that they had a brother, that the brother could take up the mantle, and I gave him a new moniker, not Thunderbird. I gave him Warpath. I've talked often. I should have just called him Proudstar and kept Warpath in my back pocket for something else. But hey, that's how it happened. I'm just looking at, I could have gotten two bites at one apple with how great those names were. Giant Size X-Men changed the landscape. I've done so many different episodes on this, and I view Giant Size X-Men and X-Men 100, which I've mentioned here recently, as Dave Cockrum's best art on the book. Just lush, beautiful, powerful figures, beautiful faces, settings, staging. Dave was the right artist to get the X-Men off the ground. And after you go Colossus and Nightcrawler and Thunderbird and Storm, I mean, Storm alone, she is, most of my original art focuses around, especially my X-Men art, do I have Wolverine pages or Storm pages? They are the preeminent characters on each and every page. Those are the ones that I justify going all in on. Storm and Wolverine are my two favorite X-Men characters. And, you know, when it comes to Wolverine, Dave Cockrum was the first artist to actually show you what he looked like behind the mask. And there had been lots of debate as to what he could or should have looked like. But Dave was the one that landed that plane and gave that to you. Dave's importance to the X-Men cannot be underscored. And again, I was reminded by that this last week with episode 6, Life Death Part 2, which opens with this incredibly exciting intergalactic battle with the Shi'ar Empire, and you've got the Kree, and most importantly, you saw, maybe for the first time, the Imperial Guard. Maybe you, watching X-Men 97, experienced the Imperial Guard. The Imperial Guard have an incredible history with the X-Men, and X-Men 107 is the very first time we met them. And here's where I'm going to build this incredible case for Dave Cockrum, because X-Men 107 came in the winter of 1977. It was post-Star Wars. You can see the Star Wars influence all throughout the issue. Chris and Dave really amped it up. And it is significant because it is Dave's last issue on the X-Men for years. We would then enter into the John Byrne era. John Byrne closes up the story. It's a two-part story. Really, it's a four-part story. It begins in X-Men 105 and then continues in X-Men 106. But 107 and 108 take place off-world. And it's incredible how great the X-Men look off-world. You can take them in any environment, and they look fantastic. And they really fit the bill here. But for a last issue, it is one of the greatest last issues that any illustrator, artist, creator ever left behind. And I'm going to stagger you with the amount of creativity that was exploding off the pages in X-Men 107. But Dave Cockrum, Giant Size X-Men number 1, X-Men 100 and X-Men 107 are to me the three finest illustrated works that he did, that he contributed. And you can tell he and Chris Claremont are cooking. This X-Men 107 is such a blast. And if without X-Men 107, you don't get what you just got with X-Men 97. You don't get that great introduction to the Imperial Guard. They are so intricately woven into the fabric of everything that Dave Cockrum is. Now, when I mentioned that I've talked about Dave before, I have, and I feel like I haven't given him nearly enough flowers. And I'm going to tell you right now that if you go into the back issue library of Raw Observations, there are two specific episodes done previously. The episode, the first one where I blew the lid off, and you know how I knew I landed this one, is a couple of different industry veterans. Guys who are probably in the business now about 20, 25 years, but back here, maybe 20, 22 years, they said, Rob, that X-Men Secret History episode, I didn't know any of that. Well, I want you to be familiar with it. It's the June 22nd, 2021 episode where I reveal to you the sheer importance of what Dave Cockrum brought to the X-Men project, the idea of launching this new vision of the X-Men that began with Giant Size X-Men number 1. Some of you only know Giant Size X-Men number 1 as a book behind a very expensive slab, okay? Because even the cheap ones are in the thousands and thousands of dollars. You get into the nines, and you're going into the 30,000s and above in regards to Giant Size X-Men number 1. It is that important of a comic book. It reset everything, not only for Marvel, but for the X-Men universe. Originally, the characters of Nightcrawler and Storm and Thunderbird and even Wolverine, we're going to have different fates. They were going to be a part of the Legion of Superheroes, which is where Dave made his name, where Dave originally made his bones. He became a fan favorite, a popular character, a guy you were like, wow, when's the next Legion of Superheroes coming out? This looks so beautiful. Again, he just had a very commercial, very compelling, slick line, and just a very popular art style. With the second time that I touched on more of the secret history of the X-Men was in May 27th, 2022. Secret History of Comics, Titans and X-Men. I go deeper. I also give you more tidbits about Dave Cockrum there. But that first one that details that Storm and Nightcrawler and sketches for a character named Wolverine and so many of the other characters that you ended up experiencing through the pages of the X-Men were intended to have a life in the Legion of Superheroes comic book for DC. I've also talked about how this was the beginning of the march that Legion of Superheroes had towards being one of DC's top tier books through the 80s. It hit the skids in the 90s, and the Legion truly has never recovered. But for the kids of that age, Legion was a top selling. It was a top selling book for DC Comics. It was a top charting book. And eventually, at one period in the 80s, the Legion was responsible for 4 books a month in terms of spinoffs and specials because of the popularity it had with fans. But Dave was a key part of that ascension of the Legion of Superheroes in the 70s. And in the Secret History of Comics, you're gonna hear in both of those episodes, you'll hear a little about why Dave left DC Comics. And it was in a dispute. He was unhappy with the way he was treated. It has to do with some art that was promised to him to be returned in a time where they weren't really returning artwork. There's great drama behind this stuff. And then right now, let me just stop and tell you, like, the great thing about comic books, we have comic book artists have as cool names as movie stars, okay? You got Robert Redford, you got Tom Cruise, right? You got Richard Gere. Well, we have John Byrne and Dave Cockrum, okay? These are great names. Gil Kane. I mean, Gil Kane, you know, sounds like a movie star, sounds like a matinee idol, sounds like a John Wayne. Okay, so let's give it up for these cool names. Dave Cockrum, what a great name. I do not give him enough credit, but that opening scene that lasts for about 8 minutes in the new X-Men 97 Episode 6, Life, Death, Part 2, and the excitement that I saw across the internet about and social media about the Imperial Guard and their, you know, being viewed now in this season. And you might have seen them before, but for so many people, this is their first encounter with them on this cartoon. And I mean, again, people were just like, wow. And I just said, wow, you know, another wow from me, because I remember the excitement in X-Men 107 watching that double pager. So X-Men 107, which is this off-world saga, which is really, you know, establishes just how powerful Jean Grey as Phoenix is. And before I forget, the Jean Grey, both Phoenix and Darth Phoenix costume are attributed to Dave Cockrum. Dave Cockrum is, as you're going to find out, an idea factory and what I believe to be the second best costume designer in comics after Jack Kirby. The guy just had an eye and a flair for a great cut on a leg, a great, you know, cut and design of a costume. In the Phoenix costume, the only difference between the Phoenix and Dark Phoenix is the green turns to red. Okay, so it's the same costume except for a color change. But Dave Cockrum, that cover to X-Men 101, Jean Grey rising from the ashes, she's now Phoenix, she's no longer Marvel Girl. That iconic, we throw that word around a lot, but Phoenix's costume really is iconic. It's very simple, but so effective. And he incorporates again the red aspect of Jean Grey's hair is also a design that pulls the whole thing off. So when you get to X-Men 107, as this cosmic story has been building, and they land off world, the splash page is another wow big one that would net some serious yahoos. Okay, it is a just incredibly impactful splash page, which opens with an incredibly impactful cover. On the cover of 107, the X-Men are surrounded by the Imperial Guard. And you're looking, and right from first glance, I'm going, these characters look a little familiar to me. And I've talked about how I discovered what I call echoes at Marvel. I discovered through Marvel, through the Avengers, through Squadron Supreme, Squadron, Supreme Being, and Echo, an absolute Echo, character for character, member for member, power for power, of the Justice League of America. And it was an epic tale. It never affected me at all that it was so obvious that this Golden Archer is Green Arrow, and, you know, Captain Hawk, or Cap'n Hawk, it's C-A-P apostrophe N, is Hawkman, and you know, Hyperion is Superman, and Dr. Spectrum is Green Lantern. They really built out the Justice League over this giant Avengers storyline when I was 7, 8 years old, and it just riveted me. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's a way to get the Avengers to battle the Justice League for 6, 7 issues. Well, similarly now, just a couple years later, I'm opening the X-Men 107. I'm pulling the cover, you know, the cover of this book off the spinner rack at the liquor store. You betcha, the best comic book distribution of my youth. And I'm like, this looks rad. Again, you open the first page and it's Dave Cockrum's best art. The splash page, inked by Dan Green this time around, not inking his own work as he did on Giant Size X-Men number 1 and X-Men 100, but this incredible splash of the X-Men, and it's got a, you know, foreground with Cyclops in the foreground, and then middle ground with some of the characters in the background with the flying characters rising. It has great depth. It has got a great angle to it, and it's really, you are swept up in the drama. You can tell that the X-Men are looking at something that is really like sweeping them away, and they're beginning to pose in like defensive stances. So what are they looking at? We turn the page and there is this double pager of the Imperial Guard, which is, for all intents and purposes, Marvel Comics version of the Legion of Superheroes. Dave brings his own personal echoes of the book that made him a superstar in comic books, that made him a breakout. And you are looking and I'm like, that's Lightning Lad, that's Cosmic Boy, that's Colossal Boy, okay? That's Wildfire. I mean, just Phantom Girl, up and down the list. There's Timberwolf. And I can't tell you how long I stared at that thing, because part of it's like, what am I looking at? This is absolutely very familiar to me in regards to the Legion of Superheroes, but they are in service of the Shi'ar Empire in this storyline. There's 14 members of the Imperial Guard introduced just on that splash page alone. 14 brand new characters. This issue is jam-packed. People talk about George Perez and handling a lot of characters and a lot of figures and jostling, you know, a lot of different dynamics on a page. Well, Dave is just brilliant at pulling all of that off as well. Time and again, his staging, his blocking, there's almost 2 to 3 things going on in each and every panel. But we're not done, because it's not just the Imperial Guard. This is the blow you away aspect of X-Men 107. There are 20 brand new characters who have impacted the X-Men ever since, all of them introduced in this one issue. 20. Yes, I said 20, on top of 7 X-Men, okay? And Princess, you know, Lilandra, and Charles Xavier, and our bad guy. There are 20 new characters in X-Men 107 alone. I haven't even bothered to go and check. It doesn't matter to me. You can go, Rob, but this guy introduced 21. I don't care. They were not as impactful. Because immediately the X-Men are throwing down with the Imperial Guard, and you're going, okay, that's this guy who looks like, again, if you were a DC Marvel fan and you picked up on this, if you didn't, and I don't know what that's like, I don't know what that's like to look at 107 with fresh eyes and go, the Imperial Guard are 14 brand new concepts. When in fact, again, you know, Dave will cop to and did that these are echoes of his Legion of Superhero work. His Legion of Superheroes, you know, especially given that when he was on the Legion of Superheroes, he did redesigns for every single Legionnaire. He jumped them from the Kurt Swan era to the new era of the 70s. Those are all very important for me to note here. The Legion of Superheroes that Dave Cockrum depicted that were so popular all have brand new Dave Cockrum design. He designed all these kick-ass, again, greatest costume designer right after Kirby. Just an absolute idea factory, sketchbooks. When you go back to that Secret History of X-Men book episode, and I really want you to check that out. It'd be a great compliment with this episode, but you understand, because they've been printed in all manner of different magazines and interview journals, what would show and compilations about the X-Men and its legacy. They show you the sketches, the sketchbooks, the ideas, the concepts, how a character that was meant for one thing turned into Storm and then Nightcrawler and then, you know, all of them. It's just, and there are still characters that never saw the light of day. That Dave was that ridiculously prolific. And I just have not said his name enough. And when you, again, experience so many of his characters, because they're all there, you know, I see Bolt. I see all the different Imperial Guard characters that are still wearing Dave Cockrum designs in that opening 8 minutes of X-Men 97. Well, if you get 14 members of Imperial Guard on that one double page splash on pages 2 and 3, later in the book, after the throwdown between the X-Men Legion, the Legion inspired Imperial Guard, and they're all thrown down, they immediately engage and fight, and we're watching, and you're like, hey, that's, you know, that's Cosmic Boy, and that's Timberwolf, and you know, in the middle of the story, the Timberwolf character, who his name is Fang, Wolverine, his own costume gets vaporized, so he needs a new costume, so he takes out Fang and puts Fang's costume on to continue battling. It's really funny that happens, and it was intended possibly to be a new costume for Wolverine, and Wolverine ended up wearing an entire issue of Iron Fist, where he battles Iron Fist in the Fang, basically Timberwolf costume, and I dug it. I did many drawings of Wolverine in that costume. I thought this was the new one. I guess fans or even John Byrne didn't like it, but I liked it as a side indulgence. I'm not sure I was ready for it to be the regular costume because I just dug the regular Wolverine costume, but it didn't bother me. And it was a day where characters like the Wasp in Avengers always had a different look. It was part of the character that she always, because she was fashion-minded, a fashion designer. She would always have a different costume as the Wasp. Artists like George Perez and John Byrne even played it up more than the artists that had predated them, the Kirbys, the John Buscemas, the Neil Adams. They really leaned into her having all sorts of new costumes. So that's what I grew up with, and so it didn't bother me. And yet, I guess the Fang costume wasn't met with total approval and enjoyment by John Byrne, who was following Dave Cockrum. Again, this is Dave Cockrum's last issue, 107, and he goes out with a bang. It is a whopper. It is just so much fun. You can tell he and Claremont are having so much fun with all these characters, these Imperial Guard characters. And Dave must have known it was his last issue. He was just doing some of the best work of his entire tenure on the book. But towards the end of the book, the X-Men are joined in battle by a group that I'm sure you've heard of, called the Starjammers. And you're like, wait, what? Like, it's an incredible splash page where they are literally falling out of the sky into battle, and it is an upshot. So they're ascending from whatever their spaceship into the atmosphere off world to join the battle to help the X-Men, and you're looking at another five incredibly designed, incredible looking, brand new, fresh characters. This incredible image of the Starjammers. So yeah, Imperial Guard. And wait, halfway through the book, now we're getting the Starjammers, and they're getting their own giant splash page presentation, like entree, like a splash page introduction. And it's so dynamic, it's so incredible, and they are led by a space swashbuckler named Corsair, great name. There is a cat lady who is firing her laser gun, and her name is Hepzibah. And then there's a giant kind of a cross between the Hulk and the Abomination, and his name is Chud. Okay, there's a apostrophe between the CH and the OD, Chud. Okay, and then you've got Raza, who is another badass looking pirate guy with techno gear and a metal arm. And when you go, Rob, that's only four. You said five. Yes, there is a space bird on Chod. I'm just going to call him Chod, on his shoulder, named Siri. Okay. And he's never without Siri, and everyone addresses his space bird immediately. Hey, we like that creature on your shoulder. And the creature even speaks in an indecipherable, language that it's a great font. It's completely alien. So the five Star Jammers join the fray with the X-Men and turn the tide of battle and defeat the Imperial Guard. But what's happened is the sequence of events on the planet has you know, is creating a critical cosmic event. And on Earth, we end with Earth being alerted, you know, that this event is going to endanger Earth itself. And so that's the cliffhanger. And the very next issue, X-Men 108, John Byrne comes on, and we get to see him handle all of these incredible Dave Cockrum characters. Starjammers was significant in that the character of Corsair is revealed as Scott Summers' father. Yes, his father is got a spaceship and is flying between galaxies and assists him in this battle. And it opens up an entire new storyline that Chris will examine over the next several years. The father, the parents that Cyclops thought were dead, he and his brother Alex, who is the character of Havok, are now coming to the realization, you know, that their dad was spirited away to the stars and has had this entire life without them. But and of course there's the you know, obvious resentment that Scott has. And when Dave Cockrum comes back to the title after John Byrne exits with 143, Dave Cockrum comes back a couple issues later and spends another 2.5 years on X-Men, and we get an extended time with the Shi'ar, the Imperial Guard, the Starjammers, and he gets to revisit and really build off this 107 that he left with. And I think Chris is all too happy to put the X-Men in space and do this deep dive into Xavier's Shi'ar legacy and more Imperial Guard. And it's where you got Binary. It's where Carol Danvers lost her Ms. Marvel identity and was reborn as Binary. She had not been Ms. Marvel for a long time before. Prior, you guys know her as Captain Marvel, but to us growing up in the 70s, she was Ms. Marvel first. She becomes Binary, and that is also under the pencil and the illustration of Dave Cockrum, who just can't stop adding to the pantheon because this guy is so ridiculously prolific. And so when you see these characters, just know that what you are seeing is the incredible creativity. And you can say, but Rob, Chris, you know, what about his contributions? I am telling you, there is no Imperial Guard without Dave Cockrum. He has this legacy that is linked directly to the Legion of Superheroes. He brings these characters in. Then, of course, the Starjammers are added at the end, and they feel more reflective of a Chris and Dave collaboration. I think Dave is like, hey, on my last issue, I want to do all these Legion characters. Can you implement them? Yeah, sure, no problem. But we got to do the Starjammers in the end. And of course, Corsair and the Starjammers are very important in the next issue and the wrap-up of all of this. But Dave Cockrum, from the original, the relaunch with such notable breakout characters as Storm and Colossus and Nightcrawler, to then just continuing on his way out the door, gentlemen, on the way out the door, ladies, gentlemen, everybody, he goes, here's 20 characters to remember me by. And it doesn't feel overstuffed. It doesn't feel overdone, overcooked. It is just a perfect blend. And as a kid, I felt the same excitement that they were putting into the page. Chris Claremont and Dave Cockrum may have been having the most fun of their entire run as Dave left the book. Again, in other podcasts, I have covered why Dave left the book. I'll just tell you right now, he was not meeting the deadlines as they wanted to go to a monthly schedule, and John Byrne could hit it. John Byrne could do and was doing at sometimes during this period 3 books a month. John was a workhorse. He was incredibly prolific given how detailed and lush his own artwork was. But everybody's different. And what also coincided with this, with Dave, because the three issues leading up to this, Dave contributes to 106, he's a part of, but there's also Bob Brown and Tom Sutton contributing to the art on that issue. But 105, which has Fire Lord in it, is inked by a really great embellisher and inker named Bob Layton, who would go on to great fame with Iron Man and Hercules and become a signature executive member of Valiant when Valiant was blowing up in the 90s. Bob Layton over Dave Cockrum in issue 105 looks really good. I would probably slot that in as like my number fourth best Dave Cockrum book on this. Dave Cockrum pages are expensive. You know, let's go to the tail of the tape. Let's go to the ticker tape, because I'm going to tell you that receipt says Dave Cockrum originals are also in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. That splash page, that double page splash that I just mentioned to you, those are, you're not getting your hands on those without dipping in six figures. Okay. The recent Dave Cockrum stuff that is sold is in the 125,000 range, sometimes more. The cover's insane. His era on the X-Men, those pages are harder to get. And the really good pages, I haven't seen. Like, a great Dave Cockrum page has not come to light. I'm not sure where they've been, who has them in lockdown, but when they come and the ones that have been coming to auction lately, they're decent. They're certainly not of the A-list Dave Cockrum art, but listen, let me tell you, when I talk about Dave Cockrum, I talk about this era, this stuff is worth significant coin. It's that well drawn and illustrated, and it is that meaningful and impactful. But just think, on your way out the door, you're dropping 20 characters that will become part of the fabric and the history, so much so that Dave, who's been long passed away, you know, he's long gone, but those characters are appearing on the Disney Channel, on X-Men 97, and just lighting up the social media, the internet. And we don't say enough that without Dave, and obviously Len Wein and his other co-authors, but again, comic books is a visual medium, so I'm going to always lean in harder, more severely into the visuals. No Storm, no Nightcrawler, no Colossus. I'm not sure you have an X-Men without those three, period. The appeal of all three of them alongside Wolverine, and initially alongside Banshee and Sunfire and Thunderbird, that was impactful. The look and feel of those characters is why we got so excited, and why the X-Men took off with my generation's fan base, and they became the preferred super team. And 107, they just look great together battling the Imperial Guard, who I hope that we continue to see more with. There was a Starjammers special. They did them in the Dark Knight format in the 90s, like what they called that format Prestige. It came out Dark Knight, you know, these square bound 48 page comic books. Forever, people called them the Dark Knight format. Even when DC Comics immediately followed it up with a Green Arrow, same format by Mike Grell called the Longbow Hunters, we all said, oh, that's Dark Knight. That's Dark Knight format. Well, they had to name it something. Marvel didn't want you calling their books, you know, Dark Knight. So they called the Prestige, the square bound glued, you know, they're glued. They're not stapled. There was two Starjammer specials that Dave Cockrum did in the early 90s that, again, have incredible depictions of the Imperial Guard. The Starjammers and the Imperial Guard are simpatico. They go hand in hand, especially when Dave Cockrum is around. And when he did that Starjammers miniseries, the Imperial Guard are very much present. And when he comes back for his second run, as I stated, they are very much present in this entire what's called the Brood saga. I'm also leaving off the table that Dave Cockrum gives us the Brood. It's ridiculous how prolific he is. 20 characters dropped in X-Men 107 as he is headed out the door to become, what I didn't finish up, become their dedicated cover artist. Dave was going to take a position on staff at Marvel, which Gil Kane, who I already said his incredible name, he had previously held. And what happens is, and it used to be the norm, there was a gentleman named Ed Hannigan handing out cover assignments through the 80s. People would be given, one master cover editor would be told by everyone what was coming out in the comics. And the imaging, the layouts, the designs were generated by a master cover layout artist. And that master cover layout artist had the choice of just doing the cover himself, which is why following this, Avengers gets so many Dave Cockrum covers. Dave Cockrum stays on the X-Men covers by and large. Marvel Team-Up gets Dave Cockrum covers. Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, gets Dave Cockrum covers. Fantastic Four gets Dave Cockrum covers. Iron Man gets Dave Cockrum. That was his job now. His job was to be the head cover artist, and if he wasn't drawing it, he was giving a sketch to George Perez, or he was giving a sketch to John Byrne, or he was giving a sketch to whomever was going to draw that cover for that comic. So he got this really nice staff position that put his incredible artwork on so many covers from 77 through like 1980, 81. And so Dave, again, had tremendous impact now from just a different vantage point, but his time with the X-Men at that point was over. But when we look back, I just have not given Dave Cockrum enough due, and I am rectifying that today and hopefully opening your eyes again to his contribution so that now you go, man, that Imperial Guard team, that space team, that, you know, Galaxy Squad, however you designated them in your mind when you saw them or you were reminded of them. You know, Jim Lee and John Byrne did great depictions of the Imperial Guard. They are really great depictions, but they don't even exist. They don't even exist. And Gladiator, chief among them, who is the Superboy, Superman Echo among, that design has never been changed since 1977. That's how good Dave Cockrum is. That's how incredible his eye for a great cut and just the way he sections out his costumes. And works with them in terms of color, just fantastic, amazing. We don't give him enough due, and I figured this was a perfect time given the explosion of excitement in that opening 8-minute Shi'ar segment of X-Men 97. Come on, we are just loving that show, and I am so excited that that show is giving me a platform to say names that maybe you're not familiar with, or maybe you should go back and look at some more. All of Dave's stuff is collected over and over and over. If you don't have the money to go buy the individual back issues, there are so many. The Masterworks collections, both hardcover and softcover. I'm sure there are epic collections. There are all manner of collections out there, affordable collections that you can digest this, even probably on Kindle. Hey guys, I buy stuff on Kindle all the time so that I have it on my iPad, so that I have it when I travel, especially like recently now with the work I'm doing on Deadpool. I'm utilizing some older, very rare. So some of you are going to be like, I've never heard of this character. There were people at Marvel when I pitched this story were like, I don't know who that character is. And I'm like, yeah, I figured you didn't. But I then download the reference for that character and carry it on my phone or my iPad when I'm traveling so that when I get to my destination, I can draw from that reference on that phone. So, you know, whichever way you want to encounter this stuff, it's out there and it's brilliant. And X-Men 107, 20. Hello, Imperial Guard. Hello, Starjammers. All from one powerful pencil. And yes, Chris Claremont wrote it, but the visuals and the gestures and that splash page that introduces the Starjammers is phenomenal. You just feel the rush. You feel the gestures are just conveying so much kinetic energy, and it just excites. And I remember being 10 years old and being wow, because this is the fall of 1977. So I have now turned 10 years old in October of 1977. And my mind is blown, and yours will be as well. Dave Cockrum is an architect of the X and deserves all praise. So one of the most resonant things I can say about Dave Cockrum is that he inspired me to do comics along with all the other greats. And he is a great. He is an absolute great. If he's not great in your mind after this podcast, then you need to reevaluate great, in my humble opinion. Dave Cockrum, his work, his designs, his characters, his action, his storytelling, he was one of the talents that motivated me, that made me want to draw, to replicate his work, to get into comics, to be a comic book storyteller like Byrne, Miller, Simonson, Chaykin, all the others that I mentioned, Starlin. Just an incredible impact. Just an incredible impact, and so glad we got to celebrate him. So here we are, and by the time you listen to this, I think it'll be maybe like 18 hours after you have already seen and parsed and examined and done the autopsy on the Deadpool Wolverine 3 trailer. But I got to weigh in, right? I got to weigh in because I'm part of that equation, that there is a serious reality that if you know, I've always said if Rob Liefeld doesn't exist, you don't get Deadpool, zero, period. You don't get any Deadpool whatsoever. So, of course, I'm going to weigh in on this. Of course. I was so excited because I knew that they would show a ton more Wolverine because the Super Bowl tease really, you know, removed him from the equation and left you like just with that end shadow and knowing how much you would want him. And so I knew that this would be a huge Wolverine-centric trailer. The couple things that I'm so excited about are what's not in the trailer because there's stuff that I was on set for that I think fans are going to go just absolutely nuts for. And it's kind of the kind of stuff that you witness that you're like, this will be such a compromise if I ever share any of this, and I know that I'm going to be tested. They're always great to me on these set visits. They're really great. If you think that I have to sign an NDA or anything, I don't. They don't ever put any papers in front of me. They just they are very much like, hey, we trust you. You're a professional. You know. So you when you read about people not telling their kids about stuff, it's really out of this just overabundance of caution that you have to subscribe to because you need to keep this stuff secret. And so there is great stuff that I was boots on the ground, witnessed standing behind the camera that I saw with Ryan and Hugh that is still not being seen. So there's, look, if you think that there's stuff out there being spoiled, there's so much stuff that is yet to come that is going to blow your mind. But let's go with what you did see, and you saw a whole lot of Wolverine and Deadpool facing off. Great action. I'm going to tell you something. I told everybody after I left the set, because I was kind enough to see all of the different set action pieces, some of which had been filmed. Some have been filmed with stunt guys. I saw all of these incredible action pieces, and of course, you have expectations with these two comic books' greatest action heroes, and maybe not heroes, action figures. You expect, hey man, let's get this action. All the Deadpool movies have great action, but the expectation for this is obviously higher. You got a glimpse of what's to come and how great it's going to look, and there are multiple. There are so many killer action sequences in this movie, and you just get you are getting a taste, a hint of what's to come. I really believe this movie has the best action in any comic book superhero movie. Some of the best action ever is in Winter Soldier. I think this is up there, game, set, match with the very best action of comic book superhero movies. Obviously, the humor is signature Ryan. Just you see his incredible, feel for what he's doing in his character, and we get that extra nasty Logan, who we first really saw in First Class when Xavier and Magneto, in that brief, all too brief, just millisecond cameo when he tells them to F off. Okay. And you you get the you get a greater glimpse of that. Sean Levy shot the hell out of this movie. He shot the hell out of this movie. When I was there, I could see how brilliant it looked, how great these movies look. People forget Sean is a big time filmmaker that has delivered giant box office success with the Night of the Museum series, with Free Guy, with Stranger Things. He's got a great eye and great sense of storytelling and impactful shots, the stuff that resonates with us. I am so impressed. And you obviously got to see Cassandra Nova for the first time. We love her. I have mentioned her on this show in numerous different X episodes, how Cassandra Nova was the first time I was scared for the X-Men in years. Grant Morrison's signature contribution to the X-Men pantheon is Cassandra Nova, who is Professor Xavier's sister in the story. She was only introduced in 2001. She's a fairly fresh character, much younger than either Deadpool and or Wolverine. But Cassandra Nova is a fascinating, very powerful psychic mind who has brought her brother, Charles Xavier, to his knees in crippling fashion. Frightening way in her introduction in the very first issue of Grant Morrison's run on New X-Men. I'm so glad we're finally seeing her, and she just looks amazing, played by Emma Corrin, who we've all been waiting to get those glimpses, and we finally got them. All sorts of Easter eggs throughout. There was a really nice Liefeld orthopedic store. Okay, because that's how I'm going to tell you right now. This is what I can tell you. It was last July. I'm home. I'm done from my European bender. I visited the set in Pinewood Studios, and I'm literally in the pool. Joy and I are just hanging out in the pool. We love our pool. Summertime, July, and I get a call. My phone's nearby. I pick it up. It's Marvel, head of business affairs. And he says, Rob, I said, hey, what's up? And they're like, Rob, we need to ask you if you would give approval to use your name as signage for a Liefeld. And he almost, he The business affair person was laughing. I know this person, a light bulb or the Phoenix store. And I said, of course, like, just like when Ryan called me on Deadpool 2 to tell me that he was going to do that running joke with Domino and the artist who can't draw feet. I said, Ryan, I don't care. Go for it. That's great. If you know me, you can most certainly take the piss out of me. I love it. I love a good joke. And so when business affairs called me, I was like, oh, it's great. Yeah, for sure. I appreciate you calling me. I appreciate you getting my clearance. And so you see that, that was pretty funny. I mean, you know, it's the kind of thing. I was like, I was just there 2 weeks ago, but I guess this had come up. They had built out this street. There is a, I'm going to be honest, that scene where they turn and walk down the street with the Liefeld store behind it. It was an evening shoot, and Ryan and Hugh were coming out of their trailers to come film a scene. And it was on a similar street scene, not that one. They hadn't built all those storefronts behind them. But my breath was taken away when they both walked down that street. I'm literally Rob Liefeld, 55-year-old adult male. My character is driving this movie. This movie is a product of some of my imagination, obviously combined with other X-Men imaginations, creative imaginations. And I was speechless seeing them walk from their trailer. I've seen it before. I've seen Ryan as Deadpool in Deadpool 1. I've seen Ryan as Deadpool with Josh Brolin in Deadpool 2. I was so like, whoa. Now, earlier in the day, I had seen them act together, but just, it was like two guys going down the middle of a street in a cowboy western. There was no cowboy western. That is not an Easter egg. They were literally going between buildings at Pinewood to get to the set that had been built outside for them to shoot into the evening. But just watching them, I slow-mo'd them. I slow-mo'd them in my mind. And I was so taken away. But yeah, you got your first glimpse of Mighty Dogpool licking, and then the cocaine stuff at the end, which is what I came home and laughed about with my wife. I think we all have a brand new take on Do You Want to Build a Snowman? And kudos to Ryan, Ryan Reynolds and Leslie Uggams, because you will never associate, I think an entire generation is going to associate Do You Want to Build a Snowman with Deadpool Wolverine now in, instead of Frozen, okay? Really great. I love the, oh my gosh, the twisting of all the stuff. I'm going to leave it to everybody else, because there's already, you're going to have already watched 20 different breakdowns of this trailer and parsing all the info, and you're going to have a great time. You are going to have a great time. The action is spectacular. The movie looks spectacular. It's funny as hell. It's going to have so many gigantic surprises. Anytime Deadpool has a katana in one hand and a gun in the other, and he's slicing and dicing. And that is, to me, that is the full Liefeld experience, that brilliant red and black. I love seeing my art come to life. I love the thing I love the most about the entire film was the Madonna soundtrack. Like a Prayer is the perfect music to track along with this trailer. So, A plus, 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 plus. There is so much you're still not seeing. So much you're going to go crazy bonkers for. And with good reason, this one lands. This plane delivers. You are going to dig it all the way through. I am so excited for all of you. I am so excited that you dug this trailer, which again, why are we seeing this movie? Because of Ryan and Hugh, because of Logan and Wade. And I am thrilled that you guys are excited, because before I got on here, I read 15 minutes of just people going crazy over the X-Men stuff. We are in a new age of X excitement between X-Men 97 with all the stuff that's going on there, and of course the Dave Cockrum aspect that cannot be divorced. We do not say how important he is. Look, as great as John Byrne is, he did not create near the amount of visual representation, characters, designs that Dave Cockrum did. So here's another toast to the genius of Dave Cockrum. And I am so excited that you guys are digging the Deadpool Wolverine trailer. I just wanted to drop in, make a few comments, tell you, so much better is yet to come. Get excited. That movie is worth getting excited about. I think it really is going to be the right movie at the right time. It just, it's that rare, like, you can't bottle that. You can't anticipate being the right movie at the right time. You just, it just happens. And this is happening. And I think you're just going to dig it so much. So I need to add, yes, you can get called by Marvel Business Affairs and they can tell you we're going to do a lot. It just rings in my ears. Rob, there was kind of nervousness. And then, like I said, the guy broke into laughter. You know, would you be opposed? Do you give approval to us using a Liefeld orthopedic store? And I'm like, I have an orthopedic store. Like, I love the word orthopedic. So yes, it's one thing to be told and know that it's coming. And then when you see Wolverine and Deadpool walk down in front of it, it's pretty fantastic. Yes, I loved it. I laughed out loud. My family laughed out loud. I hope you're laughing out loud. It's going to be so much fun. So there you go. Deadpool, Wolverine. I keep saying the 27th. It's July 26th, but who knows? I think around the world, in other parts of the world, is July 25. So get excited, people. And make sure... make sure you make a reservation with your Liefeld orthopedic store, or Just Feet, as they say, Just Feet. That's a wrap for today's episode. And I just, again, thank you so much for listening. At this point, I remind you that when I'm not on the podcast, please visit me on X, which I still call Twitter. So do you, but we have to officially call it X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'm on X at Robert Liefeld, RobertLiefeld, the whole damn name. Rob Liefeld got squatted on immediately, but I have a blue check, so you know that it's really me. I'm signified, verified. Thanks, Mr. Elon. Now you're going to get mad at me because I said thank you to Elon, but whatever. Hey, Instagram, I'm at Rob Liefeld. Another blue check tells you it's really me, not one of those imposters. There's a lot of imposter accounts, guys, okay? A lot of imposter accounts. So on Instagram, at Rob Liefeld, on X, at Robert Liefeld. I'd love to hear from both of you. I read your replies, your DMs. I sometimes share the stuff that you share with me in my stories, or I give the, I mean, what do we call, aren't they retweets? Even though it's not a Twitter anymore, I do retweets on X. No, I love all of the ways that we talk. Replies, DMs, mentions on both platforms. I'm on all of them constantly all day long, in between work, in between drawing. I'm like the rest of you. I pick it up. I look at it. I check it. I go back to work. And I use it as the momentary distraction or to catch up on some news. But hey, Instagram, a lot of photos, a lot of preview images, a lot of stuff I'm sharing, the people I like, my family, the food that I love, places that I'm going, pages that I'm drawing, projects that are upcoming. Follow me on Instagram. Give me a check. I'd love to see and hear and talk to you both there and on X. Over on Facebook, we have a killer group called Rob Liefeld, Marvel Extreme and Beyond. It's just a blast, and we invite you to be a part of it. It's a Facebook group, Rob Liefeld, Marvel Extreme and Beyond. It might be myself or a gentleman named Terry Sala, S-A-L-A, who clicked you on through. We're the co-administrators of the group. It's not a page, it's a group. Great discussions. Much of what we discuss here, we carry over on Threads over there. We're having a great time sharing comics. There's art contests that Terry run. We all vote on them to determine the winner, and the winner determines the subject. It's a great place. It's a great hangout. Nothing but positive energy. Nothing but good vibes. We are not here for the negative stuff. Please join us. Rob Liefeld, Marvel Extreme and Beyond is the official name of the group. Look for us, and we hope to click you on through. I am doing a CGC in-house signing. Going to CGC, doing my second ever. We had our first ever last year. We did thousands upon thousands of your comics. You guys, we want to get these through to you and get them back to you by July 26th, 27th, when the movie comes out, when the big Deadpool Wolverine movie. Because look, the most of the stuff that I sign is absolutely X-Men, Deadpool, X-Force related, but with good reason. It's the stuff that you love so much. And if you want to share and send that to me, go to the CGC site, look up Rob Liefeld in-house signing, and get me your books. We extended the deadline because Marvel is putting out foils in May, and Deadpool Wolverine ships in May, and the Deadpool New Mutants 98 3D and the foils both come out in May, so we want you to be able to grab those and kick those forward those to CGC, because so many of you, that's the stuff that you want to get signed. Wolverine number 155, number 154, do not sleep on those books. They are resonant. You will see familiar stuff. from Deadpool Wolverine, from those images. That imagery is already starting to come out. Do not sleep on those for even just a minute. CGC signing, my second private in-house. Get your books there. There's a menu of options. Get on those. So excited to be able to sign your books. I'll be going there sometime in June, and I cannot wait to share all that excitement with you and give you all the cool signatures and the add-ons, whatever you've arranged in regards to the availability of the items on the menu. So look forward to that. Go to CGC and look up that signing and get your stuff in. We've extended the deadline. There is an app called Whatnot. You should have it. It is the number one collectible app. We want you so much to be a part of our Whatnot community, where we are sharing signed custom signatures, remarks, find out what a blood splatter Liefeld chisel logo is, what a drop shadow Liefeld chisel is, all that stuff. You'll see when you come on our show. If you follow me, Rob Liefeld, you'll be notified when I go live on my live streams. When it's my live stream, I'm looking right at you. I'm talking to you. It's a little like this podcast, except unhinged. It's a slightly unhinged. People are actually talking to me the entire time. My attention is challenged. But did you know that we have a bunch of exclusive Whatnot variants? I have a New Mutants 98 exclusive Whatnot variant. I have a Deadpool, multiple Deadpool Whatnot variants, Captain America Whatnot variants, Evangeline, Prophet, Youngblood. I have my own comic that I wrote and illustrated, and it is only available through my Whatnot live streams. It's called The Last Blood. It concerns the fate of my extreme characters from my extreme catalog. We have so much exclusive stuff that we hold just for that site. I pulled everything off my website about 16 months ago. Whatnot is my digital distribution of my books. And if you want stuff signed in that manner, and you can interact with me, it's me right there on the live stream talking to you. So get the Whatnot app, download it. We're in the comic book section. Follow Rob Liefeld, and we will look forward to getting, you can look forward to getting those notifications, and we can look forward to seeing you over there on Whatnot. Oh my gosh, I got so much going on that I got to share with you. My last Deadpool project is going to be announced. It's coming out later this summer. You're going to want to be a part of it. I hope it is the weirdest thing I have ever done. It is absolutely the most bizarre story. I think it really is a story only I could tell, because only my indulgences lean in this particular manner. So join me. That's going to get announced really, really quickly. I have a variant cover on Deadpool Wolverine number one. It's coming out, I think, the first week in May. It's coming out really soon. I want to be able to you get my variant every time they drop. People tell me they're sold out. So I don't want you to miss out. Make sure your retailer is carrying the Rob Liefeld variant to Deadpool Wolverine. I'm really, that issue really came together. I really dig it the most. I hope that you can participate in that cover and make sure that your retailer has one for you. So that's coming up here real quick. I'm just trying to put everything in focus that is coming up so that you can know that this stuff is happening. If you have the hankering, yes, I love that word, hankering, for an extra podcast or two, I have a Patreon, Rob Liefeld Patreon, and I have been hiding podcast episodes there. Now, there's a membership. The Patreon is more exclusive, but obviously extremely affordable, and you don't need them in your life. You don't need them, but if for whatever reason you want to see behind-the-scenes sketches, drawings, preparation that I do for my pages, and all new podcast episodes, hit up my Patreon, and you will find that extra material there. It does not interfere whatsoever with these Tuesday and Friday episodes that we're going to continue to bring to you. 2024 is so exciting. We have so much to cover, so much to talk about. So thank you so much for any interaction that you have with me on any level whatsoever. And finally, Evangeline. You might have heard about Evangeline. A lot of cool stuff going on about Evangeline. Some of that news leaked a couple weeks back. We've got a lot of great stuff going on, but the number one thing with Evangeline is there is a Kickstarter going on right now, thrown by Counterpoint Comics, Counterpoint Entertainment. They've done 30 successful Kickstarter campaigns, and they got the license to bring Evangeline omnibuses to life, and we want you to have those omnibuses. So get on those as fast as you can. Get on there, make your pledge on your different reward platform, and make sure that you're going to get one of these omnibuses. Counterpoint, the reason I went with them and granted them the license, because they're so good at what they do, and that there is a ton more extreme licenses to come with Counterpoint, if in fact you are satisfied and we meet the demands that you have put upon us in terms of giving you this great omnibus. And we have now made, for the first time ever, collecting the Evangeline miniseries, original series, some great covers, some specialty platforms. Go to Kickstarter, go to the Evangeline Omnibus, look for Counterpoint Entertainment, and make sure you get on that. That's going to run for another few weeks here. Wow, what a crazy, crazy busy episode. At the end of each and every episode, I read your generous, incredibly thoughtful reviews of our show. I appreciate so much that you take the time and that you write these reviews. I know what it means. You pull out your keyboard, you write something very generous and very kind about our show, and you send it in, and we are the beneficiaries. We are the lucky ones. And today, I'm just going to give you one that could not be any more brief, any shorter, but it is no less heartfelt and appreciated. This is from Japan Bike Guy. Japan Bike Guy gave us 5 stars. He left this on the Apple platform. Many of the times, the Apple platform is where we get the majority of our reviews. Some of you send them to me through all different social media platforms, but the Apple reviews it's a great help when you leave them there. It helps lift and elevate the profile of our show and help the traction and the awareness. And I appreciate that so much. This is very brief. It's from Japan Bike Guy. And it says, proud to listen to someone like Rob Liefeld. And it says simply, very simply, it says, your tribute episode was devastatingly beautiful. He's speaking of the tribute that we did here to Mr. Ed Piskor. Long may he rest in peace, rest in power. I know this last weekend there was a Ed Piskor tribute memorial, and I know from the people who were there that his family was extremely touched and lifted up. And we miss you, Ed. We still miss you. Thank you, Japan Bike Guy, for just jotting down that really generous review and just generous thought. And it just refocuses on the great talent that we lost in Ed Piskor. And we can just once again just say how much we miss and appreciate and love Ed and his work. And thank you so much for that. At the end of each and every episode, I just want to wish you the very best. I just want to wish you all the best. I hope that your mental, spiritual, emotional, and physical state are exactly where they need to be. I hope that you had some great time with your family. I hope you went out and had a great meal, a great dinner, a great lunch. You had some great dessert. You had some great laughs with some old buddies. This last weekend, I had breakfast with my high school buddies. We do that about 6 times a year. I mean, I've known these cats since like 1982. It goes back all the way. We have such a great time. And that was just an incredible Saturday morning, just getting away, catching up with all my buddies, just getting inspired by listening to their stories and sharing and receiving and the great food and the great memories that we made just this last Saturday. That's what I mean, getting off the grind. Get off the treadmill. It grinds all of us. We all have our burdens that we're carrying. You're carrying them. I'm carrying them. Just get out there. Share love, receive love, give laughter, receive laughter. This is really the way I live my life. And I know that we all need to just pivot away from the stuff that's just grinding us down. Life is difficult. It has we have so many responsibilities, but you got to feed your soul and do that with a great book, a great comic book, a movie, a show. Again, the meals, the friends, the laughter. I am rooting for you. Boom, fist bump right through this Blue Yeti mic, wishing you all the best. Thank you for listening. Do not leave me. You know, I get a little weirded out here at the end. You come back and see me. I'm going to be right here. We will absolutely, most definitely, and inevitably talk again real soon.